Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Hello there, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
Scott McKay is away this week. Filling in for him is the investigative reporter for WPRI-TV, Channel 12, Tim White. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Ian.
And we're pleased to welcome back as our special guest, the Republican state representative from West Warwick, Patricia Morgan. Thanks for joining us, Patricia.
Yeah, good morning, everyone.
A state commission study released yesterday shows that Governor Raimondo's truck toll plan will boost Rhode Island's economy. Our guest, state rep Patricia Morgan, is among the critics who say bridges should be fixed without tolls. House Speaker Nicholas Mattiello has taken a go-slow approach on the governor's proposed truck tolls. So now that the impact study is out, Rep. Morgan, do you think that the House will be more inclined to support the governor's plan?
I certainly hope not. I think it begs what all of us know. I mean, common sense tells us that you can't take $60 to $80 million worth of tolls out of our economy, and it won't hurt it.
But the governor's office says that much of this money would come from trucks that are passing through the state that don't call Rhode Island home, and they're hoping to get federal money as well.
You know, I've talked with a lot of truckers, and they say that for those just passing through in Connecticut, there's a little roadway called 395 that doesn't add very many miles to the trip and will be a lot cheaper, and that trucks will divert there. If they divert, we're going to lose their diesel taxes, right? Trucks pay per mile that they're in a state, and if they divert to Connecticut, we won't get that. I'm skeptical of any economic impact study. An impact study is put together to sell a program, and whoever's selling it pays for it. Taxpayers should be very skeptical.
Well, let's take Rep. Morgan's point to Maureen. How about that? Do you take at face value that the governor's impact study says exactly what the governor would hope it would say?
Well, I mean, I don't expect that it says exactly what it says, but it does indicate the possibility that we can get through this in the short term, at least, and move along and get the roads fixed. I want to commend Patricia Morgan, Representative Morgan, for what she's doing, because she's doing a loyal opposition. She's building on that. But I do think your plan is ill-advised. I think at this point, I think we're so far down the road with the deficits that are coming up next year. The idea that we can get money, $200,000 here and $400,000 there, I think is just unrealistic. And with a $100 million deficit coming down the road, I think it's unrealistic fiscally.
A few years ago, we in the House and the Senate realized that borrowing was really hurting our state's economy and our budget. And so we took actions to stop the borrowing. So now you're saying that if we borrow we're borrowing $600 million, that extra borrowing isn't going to hurt it? Of course it is. If we're going to fix structural deficits, we have to do the hard work of eliminating, modifying the regulations, the rules, the laws that are a burden on our economy, not by adding more burden through borrowing.
Tim White, what do you make of the findings of this impact study? And from where you sit, do you think it's more likely the House will back the governor's truck toll plan now?
I think that's absolutely clear. And with all due respect, Representative, there's no shot that the Republican plan is going to get through the House, at least as we see it right now, right? I mean, the governor doesn't support it, and the House Speaker has made it clear he blasted the plan that came forward. I just want to echo something that Maureen had said. I think it is absolutely healthy, though. All that being said, it's healthy that the Republican caucus, who, let's point out, just all on the House side, unanimously passed the Democratic governor's budget, is now coming out with an alternative plan, which I think is a good, healthy thing to happen. Whether you like it or not out there, it does spark debate, and it is, it's being picked up by the media, and it's creating a conversation on an important topic, and I think that's good.
A new audit reveals questionable spending by the State Department of Children, Youth, and Families. The former head of DCYF faces possible probes by state police and the State Ethics Commission. Janice DeFrancis was not available to us, but she tells the Associated Press that she denies any wrongdoing. Tim, one of the takeaways here seems to be a growing number of problems within various state agencies, including the State Department of Transportation. How concerned should Rhode Islanders be about how their government is being run?
This incident is sort of reinforcing my feelings and some of the reporting that we've been doing on this, that record keeping in Rhode Island government is deplorable. I mean, as you point out, DOT and now we have DCYF. We've seen many other agencies. There's just lousy record keeping, and it takes a crisis, right, to highlight all of this. It's 2015. Maybe there needs to be better training, something like that, to move this forward, but it shouldn't be like this. And a quick note on Janice DeFrancis, whether or not the state police find anything criminal, whether or not there was an ethics violation, we'll find out. But even if not, even if that those things don't bear any fruit, for somebody who's the executive director of that agency, she must know the perception here and how bad this could have looked when it came to light.
Representative Morgan, how widespread do you think that these kinds of problems are within state government? Are these isolated examples, or is this really a widespread situation?
I couldn't answer that, but I can tell you I think that government spends money poorly. It's other people's money. It's not their personal monies. They have not put in those internal controls that every business knows you have to. You have to have internal controls so you know where every dollar is going and that every expenditure is justified. We just don't do that in state government.
I think the governor has made some good moves in the sense that there has been longstanding problems at DCYF as well as DOT. We knew that. And I applaud her for beginning to look into it. That said, I do agree with Tim in the sense that overall, while many agencies are working well, I'm sure, the whole idea of record keeping and transparency is one that has to be addressed across the board.
A short-term agreement was reached this week to keep the Coventry Fire District operating, although not without tension and allegations of intimidation. Maureen, do you think there is a long-term solution to the ongoing problems with fire districts in Coventry?
Well, I think there's a long-term solution. And my take is I think this is a tipping point. I think we're at the point now, similar to Central Falls, we had to do something about the pension and Central Falls went bankrupt. I think Coventry is going to prove to be the tipping point here in that we're going to have to rethink how we do fire services. I applaud Representative Morgan because you've been in the forefront of that. But nonetheless, I think things are going to change. They already are with platoon systems and so forth. So I think we're moving in a very different direction towards a very different model.
Tim White, is Coventry the tipping point?
I couldn't agree with Maureen more. I mean, Central Falls was the canary in the coal mine. I think Coventry is now for fire districts. But, everyone thinks that, consolidation is the answer here. It might be, it might not be. But it's going to take some real leadership to make any change like that happen. And I was thinking about this. I wonder if there isn't a role here for the lieutenant governor's office. You know, Dan McKee, who is the mayor of Cumberland, oversaw a consolidation in his town. He talked about on the campaign trail, Ian, as you remember, that he was going to be the spokesperson to cities and towns at the state house. Here's an opportunity. Here's something he could do and try and tackle.
What do you think, Patricia Morgan?
I agree it's a tipping point, but I don't agree that the idea of districts is the bad idea. There's many fire districts that do a great job for their residents, and they do it affordably. What is lacking are taxpayer protections. So there are no tax caps and no debt limits in fire districts. I tried to put in a bill last year, obviously. You can imagine where that went. That being said, we need to put taxpayer protections in. We don't mind if it's a little fire district as long as the taxes aren't going up 15 and 20% a year.
If Speaker Mattiello says fire district issues are local issues, and if most citizens are not involved, how can your proposal come to fruition?
The state assembly actually charters every fire district. So within those charters, we have to put tax caps in. We have to put debt limits. We have to say that any expenditure or contract that encumbers the residents by more than $100,000 needs to be approved by residents.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Maureen.
Thank you.
Tim White from Channel 12.
Thanks for having me.
And State Representative Patricia Morgan.
Glad to be here.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage.
Major funding for Political Roundtable is provided by the Rhode Island Foundation, using philanthropy to move Rhode Island forward.